Is it a passing storm or a more permanent change to Australia's political weather system? I'm talking about the surge in the polls for Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party, which is enjoying the kind of public support it hasn't seen since its formation in the 1990s. Back then, the party faded. So does the past serve as prologue, or are we living in a different, more populist age? These are questions I put to one of the country's foremost political historians, Frank Bongiorno of the University of Canberra, who I began by asking, what fueled her rise back then, and are there similarities now?
I think it was different back then. You know, there was a sense of, I guess, reform fatigue among many Australians at the end of the Hawke-Keating era, a sense that they'd been asked to make a lot of sacrifices, and of course it had all ended in a recession in the early 90s that had sort of killed off many businesses. You had unemployment sitting at, what, about 11%, and many people, particularly older people, never worked again. So I think that a sense of resentment and fear, I guess, of the future was one of the, you know, the real impulses behind the rise of One Nation. And she was very skilled, I think, in the end, in kind of exploiting a sense of disaffection and grievance, this idea that kind of the country had been taken over by privileged elites during the Labor era, and it was time for ordinary people to get their own back.
Let's go back to the turn of the century, and in particular 2001, the year of the federal election. One Nation started that year by posing a threat on the right to John Howard. At the start of 2001, the conventional wisdom was that the then Labour leader, Kim Beazley, would end it as Prime Minister. Now, John Howard's fight back began before Tampa, but Tampa clearly fueled the comeback, as did the attacks of September the 11th. Was that what saw off One Nation as a political threat in the early part of this century, John Howard's victory in 2001?
It was certainly one of the factors. I think there was an argument, certainly, of the 2001 election, which, yes, was famously fought, I guess, over issues that you might broadly call national security, and that was, 9/11, the war on terror, and the Tampa and asylum seeker issue, and a sense that those issues were particularly, suited, if you like, to bringing former One Nation voters or prospective One Nation voters into the coalition tent. And, of course, very famously, Howard won that election pretty comfortably against Kim Beazley and the Labor Party. So that was certainly one of the factors. But, of course, there have been other problems. I mean, it has been a party, I think, that has been very prone to division, to defections, to a lot of infighting. You know, there was even a successful prosecution at one stage of Pauline Hanson over, you know, electoral finance, although it was later overturned on appeal. So, you know, it was a party that clearly had had all sorts of problems, you know, coming out of the late 90s and early 2000s. But certainly that 2001 election was a very important moment, I think, in taking the wind out of its sails.
Yeah, I wonder to what extent did Hansonism get absorbed into Howardism?
Look, I think there was an element of that, because one of the things that happens in the early part of this century is a shift in political agendas. I mean, a great elevation, I think, of issues around national security. I mean, one of the great ironies, of course, of that Howard era of the early 21st century is that it's a period of high immigration, including immigration from Asia, and particularly immigration from Asia. And of course, that had been one of the grievances that Pauline Hanson had raised in her very first speech. If you remember back in 1996, this idea that Australia was in danger of being swamped by Asians. So there is some irony, I think, if Hansonism was absorbed into Howardism, but certainly at the 2001 and 2004 elections, there was a sense that Howard had been very successful in kind of taking on many voters who, you know, had been attracted to Hansonism back in the late 1990s.
You spoke there about One Nation's sort of self-inflicted wounds. I mean, that was often a problem when it came to fielding candidates, that Pauline Hanson was not widely seen as a plausible prime minister. A lot of people who remember those days say the same thing will happen again. They will flame out. Is that your sense too?
It's hard to know. I mean, there has been the suggestion that they've kind of learnt from the past, that they're a more professional outfit. I mean, obviously, the defection of Barnaby Joyce is interesting. Here is someone who's led an Australian political party of the mainstream, the National Party. So, it's possible they'll avoid some of those problems. But yes, when you get you know, up to an election, a lot of candidates need to be found often rather quickly. And inevitably in those situations, you do find all sorts of difficulties. I mean, it has a very rich record of infighting and defection and all the rest of it. Mark Latham, famously former Labor leader, of course, led the party, led One Nation in New South Wales, from his legislative council seat for a time, but then he defected. So I think if you're a betting person, you probably would say that it's not going to be smooth sailing. But, yeah, it's hard to predict. I mean, they are probably a different kind of outfit, you know, than they were certainly in the 1990s when I think Hanson's success, you know, surprised many people, probably including herself.
Do you think, Frank, we are witnessing a permanent realignment of Australian right-wing politics? Is this a passing storm or is this a permanent change to the political weather system?
I'm beginning to think it is permanent. I mean, the factor that seems to me to be driving absolutely everything is the decline of the Liberal Party. It's not primarily about the National Party. It's not even primarily about One Nation. It's the fact that the Liberal Party now is being squeezed on both sides. It's being squeezed from the left by Labor and community independents, including Teals, who are winning large numbers of seats in metropolitan areas from the Liberals. And of course, it's being squeezed on the right, in one sense, by the National Party, which has now broken the coalition, and of course, also by One Nation. And I think that it's something more than cyclical. It seems to me to be a historic change after about 80 years of the Liberal Party, that it's no longer able to perform that kind of anchoring function on the centre-right. I mean, we need to remind ourselves it has been the dominant political party in federal politics since the Second World War, and at the moment it's in a very sorry state. And I think that's creating a whole lot of other effects on the political right, indeed through the whole system. And I do see a realignment going on here. How it's going to pan out, of course, is anybody's guess at this stage.
We are watching history unfold in real time. Frank Bongiorno, a professor at the University of Canberra now, and the author of Dreamers and Schemers, A Political History of Australia. It's an excellent book. Frank, it's always great to have you on Saturday Extra. Thanks for joining us.
Love being here. Thanks, Nick.
Well, let's talk to John Anderson, who led the National Party for 6 years and was former Deputy Prime Minister in the Howard government. John Anderson, thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Good to be with you.
Can I begin by asking you the same question I put there to Frank Bongiorno? Is this a passing storm, do you think, the rise of Pauline Hanson's One Nation, or is it a permanent change in the weather system?
Well, I think your starting point's wrong, if I may say so.
No,
yeah, we need to realise that what's happening right across the Western world is a massive rejection of politics as normal. You've seen it in America, obviously. People are saying they're sick of Beltway politics, a pox on the Republicans and the Democrats. We're going for chemotherapy in the form of a very, very unusual leader. You're seeing in Britain the widespread condemnation of both parties as the uni party, and the rise, completely unforeseeable just a few short years ago, of Nigel Farage's outfit. And here in Australia, your starting point has to be that we have a government with a record majority that got, you know, about a third, probably less actually, of the votes that people were eligible to cast. This is extraordinary stuff. So you've got to start with the reality that nobody's capturing public confidence much at the moment. You've got to also recognise that what we're seeing at the moment, this is particularly true as I listen to people in my area, out in rural and regional Australia, that, and especially since Bondi, there's a deep feeling that we've got a government that is taking the country in an unacceptable direction. Interest rates rising again, the economy plainly not being properly managed, living standards sliding, and it looks like it can't be turned around. And then you have Bondi, and there's the impression that we're coming apart as a nation, and the government not only doesn't know what to do about it, but is culpable in that process. You have to start with that much broader picture. Is it a permanent realignment? Well, it will be, if we don't get much greater realism from our political leaders. The Australian people want better. They feel their country is slipping away from them.
What do you mean by that, the country's slipping away from them?
Well, this is, you know, it's not hard to see. Our living standards are declining. People are worried about the fact that their children can't afford a house, are delaying family formation. They are seeing interest rates go back up again. They're not mugs. They recognise that the country's been much better run in days gone by. They see it slipping away.
And I was fascinated by your Boyer lecture that you delivered on the ABC late last year. I'd really urge people to go and listen to it. I'd urge people to go and read it. You spoke of a sort of national complacency on defence, on issues like housing, sort of lost years, lost decades. Do you think there are some sort of chickens coming home to roost here of a period in Australia? Go on.
Very much so. I do. Look, it's the downside of all that we love about traditional Australians. We're laid back, we're irreverent, we don't get worked up about things too much, we're very easygoing. The long shadow it casts, I think, is complacency. And I think there is now, I think I have a reasonable political feel. What I sense is a very rapid emergence of very deep concern. And because I live in a rural community, so I kind of understand a bit about how they're thinking and how they're feeling. The complacency suddenly, I think, turned to, hey, this is pretty serious. And I was intrigued the other day, you know, look, I know it's only anecdotal. Well, it's not anecdotal, it happened, but it's just one person. But a very, very thoughtful and intelligent man said, I'm parking my vote for now, with One Nation. He said, I know they're not a party of government, but until the other mob actually show me that they are, I want them to know they haven't got my support.
That's interesting what you say there, because at the moment this polling for One Nation, do you think that's sort of a protest, sort of pseudo vote? It's not really a vote at all, but it's an indicator of political rage. It's not necessarily an indication of how people would vote in an election.
Can I say to you, we need to be really careful in Australia. There's this over sort of patronising tone of, One Nation isn't a party of government and what have you. No, I happen to believe myself it's not a party of government. That won't surprise you. But you can't talk about it, it's just a populist uprising, we've got to attack it, when vast numbers of Australians are, responsible Australians, are plainly sending a message. And to ignore that message is to run the risk of ending up in the mess that America and Britain have. We've got to take on board, stop patronising Australian voters. I mean, I'm one of those people who actually thinks that some people are too disengaged and not paying enough attention. But by and large, Australian voters are sending a very clear message that they want better. And the idea that the Labor Party can laugh all the way to the bank is sadly true only in the sense that their formal opposition is in a mess. But thoughtful heads in the Labor Party will know that this is not good for the fabric of the nation, and they will know that they are not seen as an impressive outfit. Right now, their hand-picked governor of the Reserve Bank has finally conceded that the problem we have that's creating such misery in the economy, rising interest rates and so forth, is being partly driven by government irresponsibility. One of the things that's happened, by the way, I think this is a really important point, I believe that one of the great things that both Paul Keating and Peter Costello did was that they explained to the Australian people why economic management mattered, why containing government expenditure mattered, why it mattered to make sure that the government's hand wasn't digging too deeply into the taxpayer's pocket and squeezing out private investment. Day after day, they educated people, they mounted the argument. That's not happening. And this is very serious. Again, it's patronising. The Australian voters deserve to know what's going on. They know it's not being well run. They see it. They see it in the cost of living. They see it in the reports that our living standards are falling faster than anybody else in the OECD. They see it in the fact that their inflation here is picking up, whereas it's under control everywhere else. This is Australia. It's been a well-run place. We've been a class act. Now we look like it's all out of control. And I think a lot of Australian voters are quite fearful about all of this. Mm. And they are sending messages and patronising stuff about, it's a populist uprising, they'll get over it. That's not good enough. They're sending a clear message, and in a democracy, real leaders will listen. What is going on? The other problem that people are missing, there's a bifurcation happening here, and I don't have any neat answers for this. It's common to the West. As they peel off parties like the Liberal Party, they say, the Liberal Party's got a woman problem, and they're perhaps going to the Labor or the Teals or whatever. the men are drifting further right, looking for much harder-nosed answers to the problems of the day and thinking they're not being offered. This is not just Australia, but this bifurcation is a bit of a worry, in my view. What's happening?
John Anderson, I wish we could keep talking for hours. This is fascinating. People can listen to you on your very popular YouTube channel and your very popular podcast. They can listen to your Boyer lecture as well, which was excellent and definitely worth reading. John Anderson, former Deputy Prime Minister of Australia, thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thank you for having me.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.